Who was the last person who became your neighbor? Again, who was the last person who became your neighbor, especially if they were maybe a little bit different than yourself? And I don't just mean move next door. Jesus kind of is going to push our definition of neighbor. Like this morning, I got up at 4:55 to make sure that my kids had food before they headed out on the mission trip. But really, I don't deserve any applause. This is just what you're supposed to do as a parent, right? You're supposed to help your kids get out of the house. Jesus today isn't talking, yeah, right? Get them out of the house. No. So Jesus today is talking about not just doing good things for family or for friends. No, the genius, the surprise of the Good Samaritan parable is that people become neighbors who we wouldn't have expected them to have been neighbors. When Jesus sets up the story, there's this man who's half dead, and the first two people that come are a priest and a Levite. And a Levite is somebody who would have helped out in the temple and make sure that things were running smoothly. Maybe if we translated it for today, it'd be like a Sunday school teacher or something. And you would have expected that they would have had some neighborly obligation to help this person on the side of the road. But they did not feel that. In fact, they felt disgust. And so they moved on. They decided to cross the other side. But then there was a Samaritan. And what's shocking here isn't just the amount of care that the Samaritan gives, but that this person was a Samaritan. By the time Jesus was doing his ministry, it had been just about 1,000 years of conflict between the Samaritans and the Jews. And I could tell you a really long story about how there was once one people with one holy book and one language, and how over the course of 1,000 years they developed into two people with rivalries and differences. But suffice to say that they were just the other. And if we were to go to the Middle East today, we'd certainly find lots of people that at first it might look like, well, you guys are kind of alike, but we would discover that no, there's all sorts of tribal boundaries there. Likewise, in our own country, there are lots of divisions that we have. Divisions around class, divisions around who's a citizen, who's an immigrant, divisions around various racial or ethnic groups, divisions around politics. And Jesus today, when he uses the word Samaritan, he's kind of trying to like kind of punch a little bit, to kind of, not like harm, but just to kind of, you know, tweak a little bit here. He's pushing their buttons. So if we were to translate this today, you could think of all sorts of examples of people who were not alike. You would be shocked to find one helping the other, right? A Moms for Liberty helping a drag queen person, or right, a immigrant field worker helping out an ICE agent, right? I mean, that's the kind of level of offense that Jesus is getting to with this story. It's about people that shouldn't have been neighbors becoming neighbors. It's about the Good Samaritan, again, becoming a neighbor as he does this work and act of mercy. But we all know that's really hard. That's really hard not only to become neighbors with people we're even kind of alike, but to become neighbors with people that are really different than us. So how does this happen? Well, Jesus today suggests how this process of becoming neighbors actually takes place in our world. And what happens is that the man on the side of the road is wounded. And in my experience, and I'm sure in your experience too, it's when people have wounds, when there's a wound present, that this can provide a common ground, a space where two people or more can relate, can, again, become a neighbor with each other. And so maybe it's when on your street there was an ambulance and you went down to see what happened, and suddenly you were taking care of somebody's dog. Well, they went to the hospital, and then from that day forward you were truly, truly neighbors. Or maybe there was an acquaintance that you had, but when one of you went through a tough time and the other showed mercy, suddenly you became neighbors, you became friends. So there's this way, again, in which wounds can provide a common ground in which neighbors can grow. I heard a beautiful story about that this week at Bible study. About a generation ago, there was a basketball game, a championship basketball game in the Lebanon Lancaster League, and it was between the Columbia River Rats and the Warwick Warriors. And this is one of those games for eternal glory. And by eternal glory, I mean where you get to have your year on the banner in the high school, right? I mean, you know, eternal glory here, folks. But everybody is all juiced up. And when you have one of those championship games, the teams have played earlier that season. And so this is maybe their second or third time playing. For the seniors, this might be their eighth or ninth or even with middle school, 10th time playing against these other players. It gets chippy, right? It gets physical. And of course, the fans are there and everybody is stomping and cheering and yelling things that 16-year-olds, you shouldn't yell at 16-year-olds. And they're all into it. And at one point in the game, one of the Warwick players went up for a rebound. And when he came down, one of the opposing players undercut him. And so rather than landing like this, he landed like flat. And everybody in the stadium heard that awful sound of a head hitting against the hardwood floor. And suddenly there was just this youth on the ground who was lying flat, totally out, and the only movement in his body were muscle twitches you didn't want to see. And at that moment, everybody was on the same team. Everybody was on the same team, and everybody wanted that child, that youth, that son, that brother to be okay. And in fact, after the game, the opposing team actually went to the hospital to see if the boy was okay. Again, suddenly there were no longer two sides, but everybody was together on the team. Let's hope and pray that this boy is healthy. This can happen in life where wounds, where trauma, that's even the Greek word for wounds, where the trauma of a situation can again bring us together. I think for many of us this last week and a half or so, we've been fixated on what's been happening in Texas with these floods and the kids that have been lost or have been drowned and their counselors and the grief. And it's just such an overwhelming story. And I think all of us have begun to feel like we are our neighbors to those families, and that we want to be in their kitchen and kind of embrace them and let them know that that our heart is breaking for them, that we're pulling for them. So wounds, again, provide this space where neighbors, where that happens. Yet, it's not enough for there simply to be wounds. In today's Bible story, two of the three see the wounds and they don't stop. Again, two of the three see the terribleness of the situation. They see the pain. They see the vulnerability. And they just move right on by. Right? In fact, they go to the other side. And this can happen, too, where there can be trauma. There can be challenge. There can be pain. And it doesn't bring people together. In fact, it can further divide people. It can be the sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back in a relationship. It can be a grief that is not shared in a family. I think we all know this, where sometimes wounds, they don't bring us together, but instead they draw us apart. This week when I was sharing at Bible study about the story and reflecting on how wounds become this common ground, this place where neighbors are born out of the compassion, one of the people then began to say, yeah, but you know what's so painful is that it could have been avoided. And this person just kind of went off on a litany of all the officers and all the elected officials who could have, would have, should have done something different about the situation. And something happened in the room then where the air just kind of went out of the room. And it wasn't just because politics or even partisan politics had been interjected, but we were moved from the kitchen table to the courtroom. And we went from a position of embrace to one of accusation, from the hospital room to the press briefing and the interrogation. I think all of us have been curious, have read about why we want to know. And there's, again, all sorts of people and institutions to blame. Officials, the camp, why did they build in this 100-year floodplain? What about climate change? What is that responsible for? The list could go on and on. And I think the humble truth is that it's a lot easier for us to analyze and to finally have an angry accusation than deal with the painful fact that innocent children died. Again, it's a lot easier for us to sit there in accusation rather than, again, accept the fact that innocent children died. Now, you might say, but Pastor, what about justice? Doesn't there have to be justice? And I would say, yes, justice is important. But in this story, like in all the other stories that just come across our screens and our feeds, we're not given the holy choice between compassion and justice. Again, we're not given the holy choice of compassion or justice. Rather, we're given the choice of anger or apathy. Again, we're given the choice of anger or apathy. Because anger and apathy protect us. Just like the ones who walked by the Levite and the priest in disgust, and they just couldn't deal with it, so they just kind of went on their way. They didn't have to get close to that suffering. But the Good Samaritan, who here really is Jesus, Jesus really is the Good Samaritan, because Jesus is the one who embodies this. For the Good Samaritan, he comes and he doesn't ask why. He doesn't try to analyze the situation. He doesn't respond in anger. He doesn't respond in empathy. Instead, he has compassion. He has compassion, and so he gets down and he takes the time and he begins to dress the wounds, carry the man onto the animal, move the animal, take the man off, tend him more, and then pay for him. Again, it is this act of compassion. And you think about it there on the side of the road, the Good Samaritan is so vulnerable because he's down and he's focused. And those robbers, they could come back and they could hurt him. Again, compassion takes more out of us. It's more demanding. It makes us more vulnerable. Anger and apathy, they protect us. And so I challenge you to tarry a bit longer in compassion, to not move so quickly to the other ways in which we respond. In the case of these children, to really pray for their families who are grieving, and to pray for the marriages in those families, to pray for all the leaders who must try to move ahead now, to pray for the youth from our church that this morning left on a trip to go do disaster response, for the floods of last year that were last year's news headlines. Who knows, again, next summer, where we'll be sending youth and adults in our church to do this work, to become neighbors to strangers as they care for and seek to help after these calamities. Who in your life is God calling you to become their neighbor? But the last question that I want to leave you with is, when did Jesus Christ become your neighbor? Again, when did Jesus Christ become your neighbor? Because the truth is that all of us live in that way in which we respond to situations not with compassion, but with disgust. And we analyze, we get angry, or we simply have apathy because it's too much and our compassion runs short. All of us have that. And so when Jesus finds us in life, wrapped up, what does Jesus do to us? When Jesus sees us hurting, when Jesus sees us flailing, when Jesus sees us ignoring, does Jesus come at us with anger and with apathy? No, instead, Jesus moves towards us with compassion. And Jesus sees our wounds, and he cares for our wounds, physical, spiritual, emotional. He cares for our wounds by making them his own on the cross. Again, he makes our wounds into his wounds, and he makes his wounds into the common ground, into the sacred ground, where we can become his neighbor. Jesus again and again becomes our neighbor. As we gather each week, as we confess our sins, as we pour out our hearts, and as we give to Jesus our exhaustion, our weariness, our anger, and our apathy, and Jesus bears it in his body and then gives us back his compassion that is eternal and abides. Thanks be to God. Amen.